Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining me here today. Today, we're going to be focusing on all of the new enhancements in Windows Server 2012 R2 failover clustering. I'm Simon Perriman, technical evangelist with Microsoft Corporation based out of Redmond. And I used to be a program manager on the cluster team for about 4 years. So I worked on, I designed a lot of these features we're going to be talking about today. Now, for this presentation, we're really going to break it down into four parts. Looking at how we design clusters, what are the different options, the different levels of high availability, how we deploy them, how we manage them, and then finally, integration with System Center. First, let's talk about the different levels of high availability through the data center. First thing we want to think about our hardware availability, and this is going to be used for all different types of clusters. We've got to think about our workload availability, keeping those VMs online. Availability for the applications running within the virtual machine, such as SQL within a VM, your file server within a VM. Availability for the back-end storage. So if you have VHDs, VHDX files, how do we actually make access to those highly available? Management high availability. So if we're using System Center or other management systems, we want to ensure that those systems stay online as well. Finally, want to talk about site high availability. What happens if you lose that entire data center? How do you keep your applications responding? Maintain service continuity. So these are the six layers that we're going to go through, but we're really just going to focus on these four here. Host clustering, guest clustering, file server clustering, and then clustering with System Center. Now, as we go through the design, let's go through these one at a time. First of all, we want to think about our hardware availability. Biggest goal here is to eliminate any single point of failure. Now, I could spend a whole day talking about all of these different hardware availability features, but we're going to focus just on clustering. If you want more information about these, just search for cluster RAS. RAS is a hardware concept that stands for reliability, availability, and serviceability. These are basically things built into the actual hardware stack to keep it running, such as scrubbing, journaling, parity bits, RAID. Again, not going to spend a whole lot of time on here. Let's move on and really focus on the clustering. So workload high availability. This is a traditional type of clustering that you're probably most familiar with, where we have our two physical servers. We have applications that move between those physical servers. Now, this gives us the benefits of if a service crashes, we could restart the service. We can move the service to different nodes, so we have mobility as well, things such as live migration. We could detect whether the operating system of a guest virtual machine is running. If it's blue screened, restart that application. In our new releases, Windows Server 2012 and later, we can even look at the services that are running within a virtual machine. Make sure that those are healthy. Restart those. The next level we want to think about is having clustering for our actual virtual machines themselves. So basically, what you have is a virtual machine. You have Windows Server running as the guest operating system. Multiple virtual machines. These VMs form a failover cluster in the virtualized layer. This gives us availability for the applications which are running inside our VMs. So if you have SQL Server in a virtual machine, we want to detect the health of that service. So if the SQL Server service crashes, we can restart it. When you need to patch that guest operating system, fail over the service to a different node. So this is essentially the same concepts of clustering at our physical level, but moving it up into the virtualized level. And we're going to spend a little longer talking about some of the enhancements in a minute. The next thing is availability for our storage, clustering our storage, our access to our VHD files. Now, with Windows Server 2012, we now support what we call Hyper-V over SMB. What this means is we can run our virtual machines and connect over our SMB3 connections to our backend storage. Now, a nice advantage of this, as we're going through these different layers, we also added a feature called Scale-Out File Server. Now, with these two technologies together, what we're basically doing is providing redundancy to our VHD files. Now, the way the scale-out file server works is we actually put our client access point, that share name, whack whack my share, across different nodes in the cluster. So each of these file server nodes has the same share name. Now what this means is if one of these file shares, the host crashes, we still have that client access point running. Whack whack, my share is still running across other nodes. So this means the client, even if they've lost access to their VHD file temporarily, we just fail over. So almost zero downtime failover because we don't need to bring a resource back online. So essentially this means you can lose a node, you could patch a node, you can reboot a node on your file server and still have continuous access to your VHD files. It's not going to cause the VM to pause, to crash, anything like that. If we lose that access point temporarily, we simply keep the information stored in memory and then get a different client access point. Go to our router, look up the address table. We realize we have multiple file share names that are all active. Simply redirect the client to another path. So using the scale-out file server, you can provide the high availability for your back-end storage as well for our virtual machines. Next concept is high availability for our management systems. And in this case, we're focusing on System Center 2012. Now, first of all, high availability for the actual management servers. So this might be your VMM management server, your operations manager management server. All of these are fully supported running inside virtualized environments. Fully tested, fully supported. We encourage people doing that. In my own lab, I have all of my System Center components virtualized, running inside VMs. So this gives you that advantage of clustering with the mobility so you can live migrate your operations manager console, patch the host. This gives you the advantage of restarting. So if the operations manager VM crashes, we automatically detect that, we can restart it. So we've got high availability for our management systems. We could also back up those servers using Data Protection Manager. We can monitor the performance and availability using Operations Manager, using one of our management packs. Now, all of the System Center components use SQL Server as their back-end database. What we want to do is also make sure that that database is highly available as well. It's a SQL Server. We can use SQL Always On. So you could have the high availability for the SQL Server as well so that your back-end database is resilient. Could do things such as replication, mirroring, making sure that it's available in multiple locations if you need. We always want to make sure that we have access to our management system as well. We could back up that database, use a DPM. We can monitor it, use an operations manager. So built-in availability for our servers and the database they use. Now, some of the System Center components also have some different high availability features that are unique to each of one of the roles. System Center Advisor. I'm going to talk a little more about this later. It's a cloud service that runs in our data centers in Azure. So it has that availability and that redundancy built into Windows Azure. The service will always run. It won't crash. You have continual availability of Advisor. Several of our System Center products have web-based management consoles. We have App Controller, Orchestrator, Service Manager, Service Catalog, a few others in there. And any of these web-based ones can use network load balancing. So you can have redundancy, clients redirected, distributed across the different management servers. So you lose one server, not a problem. We can redirect the clients. Now, Operations Manager and Orchestrator, they have a concept. They use different names, different terminology. Essentially, it's the same concept with a master-slave relationship. You have a primary management server. You have secondary management servers. If the primary goes down, becomes unavailable, a secondary will detect that and will become the new primary. So you can have resiliency in these management servers as well with this master-slave relationship. Virtual Machine Manager has a concept of libraries. This is where you store all of your files, your ISOs, your VHDs, your templates. We want to make sure that that can stay highly available. It's a file server. We can cluster it as well. So you can always make sure that when you need to deploy a new VM, get access to a template, it's always going to be available. It's clustered. Finally, the VMM Management Server. In 2012, it can now run directly on top of a failover cluster. You have the option of running it in a VM if you want, but you can run it directly on the bare metal of a failover cluster. It has its own resource DLL, and a resource DLL is basically it makes the resource a first-class citizen on a cluster. The cluster knows how to start it properly, shut it down properly, move it around properly. And so if you ask, you know, should I put VMM inside a virtual machine? Should I put it on a bare metal cluster? This will be the one exception where we recommend running it on a bare metal cluster. Now, the reason why, anytime you virtualize, you always have that extra layer of abstraction, right? Got this translation to the virtualized layer. This means that when a failover happens, it would take a little longer for us to detect that the VMM management server is no longer available. If we're running directly on the bare metal, we could detect that faster, we can restart it faster, we can fail it over faster. So again, all of the different system-centered components fully supported running in VMs. With Virtual Machine Manager, we recommend running that one directly on the bare metal for faster detection, faster failover. Now, site-high availability is important if you actually have multiple data centers. You know, we always see these regional floods, power outages, other acts of nature that can take out an entire data center, an entire region. So we want our customers to think about, what if you lose that entire data center? We want to think about having multi-site clustering built in, where we have our nodes in different physical locations. One important concept with planning for this is that you need copies of the data at both locations. If all of your information is at your primary site, you lose that site. It's not very good being able to fail over a virtual machine or a SQL database if that information isn't already at the secondary site. So key concept with planning for multi-site clustering, you need some type of replication, copying from your primary over to your secondary. Now, in the past with multi-site clustering, you would need to work with a third-party storage replication vendor. This could be EMC, Dell, your actual hardware storage guy. They do block-level replication. Or you can work with a partner. We have about six different partners that will actually do file-level replication. People such as DoubleTake, Sios, Everrun. But in any case, you've got to think about having this information available at both sites. Now, that's traditional multi-site clustering. With Windows Server 2012, we introduced the Hyper-V replica. This allows us to have free inbox replication for our virtual machines. Now, this means that, you know, you don't have to go work with a third-party vendor. You don't have to spend additional money on licensing, additional money on support, having these different account managers. So our goal here with your virtual machines is to allow you just to simplify this replication. Now, it's important to note, Hyper-V replica only supports virtual machines. So if you have a traditional file server or something like that, Hyper-V replica is not going to be able to replicate that until you put that file server inside a virtual machine. Same concepts with any other resource. If you go put that resource, that workload, inside a virtual machine, Hyper-V replica is going to support it. So you can get this inbox replication for all of your workloads if you are fully virtualized. A couple weeks ago, we recently announced the Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager. Essentially what this is, it's a management solution that runs in Azure and allows you to coordinate the failover of these Hyper-V replicas. So you have your primary site doing replication, your secondary site receiving the replication, but in some cases you've got to power down everything on the first site, power it back up on the second site, and Hyper-V, Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager can allow you to coordinate that. Now if you have three, four VMs, you may not really need this. It's not that hard to shut down four or switch the replication of four over. If you have hundreds of virtual machines, you're really going to want to use this utility. A great way to simplify the management, single interface, a few clicks, can gracefully power everything down, gracefully bring everything back up. One other consideration with a decision whether you want to use Hyper-V replica or go with traditional multi-site clustering is the type of replication that we support. There's two types of replication you can have. You can have asynchronous replication or synchronous replication. Asynchronous replication means all of the changes happen on your primary site, written to the disk on the primary site, and every now and then, at some certain interval, it will copy that information across. So by default, Hyper-V replica does this every 5 minutes. In 2012 R2, we've provided more options. You can do it every 30 seconds or even 15 minutes. But the challenge with asynchronous replication is that, in theory, you can lose data. Let's say you're replicating every 15 minutes. You have a crash 10 minutes after your last replication. You could, in theory, lose 10 minutes of data. So you have to consider how important is this data when you're picking your replication solution. Synchronous replication, on the other hand, when a change gets written on the first site, it's immediately copied over to the second site, written there, and we send an acknowledgement back. Once the primary site receives that acknowledgement, so basically once the changes are made on both sites, then it will say that the change has been committed. Now the benefit of this, you're guaranteed synchronicity across both of the storage. Any change that gets made in site A, you'll see over in site B. So what are the trade-offs, right? You think, yeah, I really want to always use this synchronous replication. Well, when you're doing the synchronous replication, it can have a hit on performance because you have to go across a WAN, some cases a public internet, wait for an acknowledgement back for you to commit the transaction. Additionally, because you have to traverse this distance, go across this distance, it may actually have some limitations in how far apart your data centers can be. Some replication vendors say 100 kilometers, some say 1,000 kilometers. So if you're going with the synchronous model, make sure you chat with your replication vendor to figure out, what's my best option here? How much data am I willing to lose? Do I want to go with an extra replication vendor? Do I want to use an inbox solution? Now, want to really highlight this key point here. Hyper-V replica, the inbox solution, it's only asynchronous. Changes get written to the first site, replicated every now and then. So these are some of the key planning considerations you have with multi-site clustering. But let's focus on what is new in 2012 R2. We're going to focus on deploying our clusters. Now, we work with our OEMs to really try to simplify this easy-to-install experience. We have a lot of customers that are going through a hardware refresh cycle. They get brand new hardware, get it dropped off on a crate, and now we've made the deployment experience much simpler. So regardless of what hardware vendor you're using, Dell, EMC, IBM, what we can now do is offer them the ability to have a few easy steps to go and create a domain controller, create a cluster, create the clustered networks, make everything a clustered shared volume disk, and make it ready to be used in a few steps. And so essentially, you go through a wizard, answer a few easy questions, and you can get a full cluster up and running, up to 64 nodes, in less than 30 minutes. So if you're going with a brand new solution, brand new hardware purchase, chat with your OEM, see what type of easy deployment options they have. As you take a look at what SKU to select, we actually have not made any changes in our licensing from 2012 to 2012 R2. We basically have three different versions that will support clustering. Hyper-V Server 2012 is our free version. But since it's free, it's a free download, you do not get any licenses to run Windows inside a virtual machine. If you get Standard Edition, you get a license for your physical server, two virtual machine licenses. So you'd really only want to do Standard Edition if you're not going to be highly virtualized, if you just have a few virtual machines. If you're in a highly virtualized environment, you're going to go with the Data Center Edition, because this gives you unlimited licenses for your virtual machine. You buy the host licenses, you pay by CPU, and you get an unlimited number of licenses for your virtual machines. Now, we've added a new feature in Hyper-V as well that will automatically activate these VMs when they come up. Make it simple, so you don't have to worry as much about, hey, I've just deployed a new virtual machine. Now I have to go through the activation process. We can do that for you automatically. Now, the other difference between these SKUs is how you actually go and manage it. Hyper-V Server does not come with a graphical user interface. It comes with its own mini shell, a few step-by-step questions we'll show in a second, but it does not come with that full GUI. So a lot of people say, hey, I don't like that, right? I'm afraid to manage it. We have great remote management support. So you can connect with a full graphical user interface version of Windows Server, get that full management experience. Of course, Standard Edition, Data Center Edition, you have the traditional options of the full graphical user interface. So let's talk about Hyper-V Server 2012 a little bit. Essentially, the enhancements that we've made in this R2 release are to continue supporting all of the features made in Hyper-V 2012 R2. So we support shared VHDX. We support live migration compression. So if you go to any of these other Hyper-V overview sessions, all of the enhancements made in Hyper-V will also be made in Windows Server 2012 R2. Now, a lot of people say, you know, why would Microsoft give away a completely free SKU? Well, we want people using this SKU because it's going to give you higher availability. Now, the reason why, since we do not have any graphical user interface, and this version is stripped down, we actually have fewer patches. There's no file server built in. There's no Active Directory built in. You only get Hyper-V plus the clustering features. So big advantage here, though, fewer patches, that means fewer reboots. Fewer reboots, better uptime, higher availability. So across all of our Hyper-V hosts, love to see our customers running this. You also have the benefits that it's a smaller OS footprint. The actual installation size of the operating system, much smaller than the full version of Windows Server. Now, talking about the remote management options, basically, we wanted to have full remoting support. So you have lots of different options to go and manage this command line only interface version using full GUI. So you could connect using Hyper-V Manager. Manage it just like any other Hyper-V host. Failover Cluster Manager. System Center Virtual Machine Manager. Remote Server Administration Tools. And if you're unfamiliar with RSAT, this is basically a free download that you can get and install Server Manager on a Windows client machine on your laptop. You get that remote connection, full management capability, again with Failover Cluster Manager through RSAT, Hyper-V Manager through RSAT. So a lot of options. Now, there's also third-party add-ons that are available. Companies like Five9 have actually provided little packages that can be installed on Hyper-V server and give you a graphical interface to configure things such as the networks or the firewalls. So those are kind of, they can be a little cumbersome if you're trying to configure that using PowerShell command line only. But again, supports all of the Hyper-V features, all of the clustering features, including 64 nodes, 8,000 virtual machines. So let's talk about the installation options on a traditional version of Windows Server. So this would be Standard Edition or Data Center Edition. There's four different installation options. Core, which is command only. Minshell, which is basically command line only, plus a few little graphical interfaces for your firewall, for your network, some of those complicated configurations. Full, which is what gets installed by default. And then full with desktop experience. This is so you can get the transparent glass, you can have all the frames slide nicely. It'll kind of make you look like a slick Windows client machine. We really don't want to recommend putting that on server. It's going to cause some performance overhead. So you could probably, you know, stay away from that really slick user interface and improve your server performance by staying with full. However, again, really want to recommend using the minimum version that you're comfortable managing. Fewer components means fewer patches, which means fewer reboots, which means high availability. So if you can go with a core installation, do remote management, we highly recommend that. Now, we made some changes in our recommendation for cluster networks, because if you've done clustering today, you know that we're requiring a lot of networks. We also hear from customers, you know, hey, I have a blade, I only have four network ports. Sometimes you're recommending that I need six networks. So in the past, we've said you need dedicated networks for each of the different cluster roles. Now, the reason for that, we've traditionally wanted to segment each of the cluster roles through each network. So if you have client connections, we want to put that through its own network because we don't want a client, you know, flooding that network, causing some type of denial of service attack. We have a concept of cluster heartbeating. This is a health check that goes between the different nodes to make sure that all of the nodes are online and responding. We want to make sure that those health checks can go through. If a health check tries to go through a live migration network, that live migration network is flooded with traffic, sometimes that health check just can't make it through. It can trigger false failover. So again, in the past, we've always recommended having separate networks. Now, what we wanted to do with this release is we've seen a lot of people moving towards 10 gigi, going from the 1 gigabyte networks to the 10 gigabyte networks. Our recommendation now is you can have a great cluster fully functioning using two teamed 10 gig network connections. We've been testing this in the field with a lot of customers, and using, again, just two 10 gig network connections, you can run all of these different cluster networks throughout. Now, ideally, yeah, if you can have four, you know, two and two, two sets of team network connections, even better. But you no longer have to think about, I need a network just for my internal cluster communication, a network just for my public, a network just for live migration, a network for my Hyper-V deployment and management, a network for my iSCSI storage or fiber channel over Ethernet, a network for backup. We were recommending six different networks. Again, we can reduce that recommendation. Teamed 10 gig will work. Now, as another best practice, if you're purchasing new hardware, take advantage of some of these new virtualization capabilities built into the networking devices. Some of them will do more processing on the network card. Some of them will offload the processing from a network card back to the server. So these are features such as VMQ, SRIOV. So again, as you're starting to think about these next versions, go with the 10 gig networks. Make sure that they support all of the new Hyper-V features, like VMQ, SRIOV. We made a lot of enhancements to cluster shared volumes in this release. If you're unfamiliar with CSV, it's our distributed access file system, allowing multiple VMs to simultaneously access a single disk. Now, when we did cluster shared volumes in 2012, that was cluster shared volumes version 2, we made a lot of improvements around interoperability, but there were still some other Windows Server features that didn't play well, didn't work with CSV. So with this release, we wanted to make sure cluster shared volumes supported all of the Windows Server 2012 storage features. So it supports REFS, our new resilient file server, file system. Now, REFS, if you're unfamiliar with it, essentially it does a lot of built-in processing, background scrubbing, parity bit checking, to make sure to, or try to eliminate other types of disk corruption. Essentially, or in the long term, it's going to replace NTFS. So we want you guys to start thinking about using REFS, fully supported with our clusters. It's going to give you more resiliency for the structure of your file system, less chance of disk corruption. We made some improvements, and we added caching to part of clustered shared volumes. Now, what we found out was when you're doing cluster shared volumes traffic, this is doing a lot of sending memory information from the disk back to a node. And we found out, just like any other type of computer, having a cache can give you some great performance gains. Caching for memory, things like that. And so we introduced this concept of caching in 2012. It's disabled by default, have to turn it on. In 2012 R2, we improved this even further. It's on by default. And what this can do is just make sure that we keep the most used information readily available. So essentially, what you do on the host, you're going to say, I want to go and enable CSV cache. You assign a certain amount of your memory to be used as that cache, say 10 gigabytes. And with that cache, you're going to get much faster performance for your VMs because they're not sending this information back down to a disk, back down to a file system. They can read this information directly off of each host. So you want to recommend our customers start using CSV cache if they're in a highly virtualized environment. Next enhancement is integration with tiered storage. So we recently announced 2012 R2 supports storage tiering. Essentially, this means that you can assign groups of disks as your fast, maybe these are your SSD disks, medium, which might be traditional standard disks with the rotating platter, slow, older disks, tape. But we have full support for the cluster integration with this storage tiering. And so what this means, if you're using tiered storage, we just see it as a storage space, manage it in the cluster just like regular disks. And by default, we're going to go right to that fast storage. That fast stuff, as it's not being used, will gradually get moved to the slower storage and the slower storage. So full integration with cluster disks, CSV, using storage tiering. We now have parity space support. So parity spaces, it's just another disk enhancement that includes what we call a parity bit to go and check the integrity of the file system to make sure that the data is what it should be, it's not corrupt. We now have parity bit support with cluster shared volumes. We added deduplication support. Deduplication can give you some great cost savings over by reducing the storage. Essentially, with deduplication, we look for sets of shared information across multiple resources, multiple virtual machines, and we only keep a single copy, a single instance. Now, we've heard some customers that are part of our pre-release programs been using this for VDI scenarios. So VDI, they have lots of virtual machines that are almost identical. It's a client connecting to it, but that base virtual machine is the same. They're saving 90% of their storage using dedupe on cluster shared volumes. So think about that. That means they've essentially allowed them to use 10 times as much storage using the same disk. We're having customers saving significant amounts of money. They're no longer having to think about, hey, I need to purchase new storage next year. They do deduplication. It's highly available. It's resilient. And they free up a lot of storage space. So you want to certainly think about deduplication. And dedupe is also now supported with all types of live migration. So you can live migrate. Deduplication will happen. We don't worry about the virtual machine. We'll keep track of it. No impact to its deduplication on the back end. Then we added some more integration with our system center components for cluster shared volumes. So with Data Protection Manager, we could do full backup support on cluster shared volumes during live migration as well. So you can be live migrating your virtual machines between different hosts. DPM will detect it. It will keep backing it up. Operations Manager has a management pack for failover clustering, including support of clustered shared volume disks. So it checks if the CSV disks are healthy, if they're in redirected mode. Gives you that feedback in a single console. System Center Orchestrator has integration with clustering and CSV disks as well. Now, with Orchestrator, there is not, this is, by the way, our automation engine, drag and drop workflows. With Orchestrator, there is not an integration pack or a set of activities directly for failover clustering. The way we interact with a cluster is through Virtual Machine Manager. So basically, Orchestrator tells Virtual Machine Manager to go and deploy a new VM to a CSV disk. Virtual Machine Manager will then tell the cluster to do that. So there is a dependency on having Virtual Machine Manager to be able to use this with Orchestrator. And of course, Virtual Machine Manager, full support for cluster shared volume disks, clusters, everything like that. Now, one of the other enhancements that we made around storage was what we called shared VHDX files. Shared VHDX is a new capability for guest clustering, a new option for the storage for that guest cluster. Once again, our guest cluster is our cluster made up of virtual machines. Now, the challenge that we heard from customers, let me take a step back. So before this release, before 2012 R2, guest clustering supported several different types of storage for that guest cluster. We still need shared storage for a guest cluster so that that SQL application within a VM can access the disk regardless of what node it's on. So before this release, guest clustering supported fiber channel, iSCSI, fiber channel over Ethernet, and SMB. Shared VHDX is now a new option that we're adding in 2012 R2. Now, the benefits of this, we were speaking to a lot of hosters, and they said, hey, I have these customers that I'm hosting, and they need guest clustering for their applications. The problem that these hosters had was they actually had to expose their storage infrastructure to these clients. So when the clients were building a guest cluster, they would go and pick a specific LAN, a specific disk. And so there were some security concerns here because we're really sharing that storage infrastructure. What shared VHDX allows us to do is we can present a file to the customer, a VHD file. Where that file is running, that backend storage is abstracted. So you're a hoster, you simply say, hey, here's your VHD file, your VHDX file, and then they can go and connect to that VHDX file. But they don't get exposed to that backend storage infrastructure. They don't see your LANs, anything like that. So this is a level of abstraction that's going to give you additional security. And we definitely want to recommend using this as well. It's been well tested. And this will give you the ability to, you know, let's say you have SQL in a guest cluster. You basically have SQL running in a VM. Its database is stored on that VHDX file. So this is our new guest clustering storage. We made some improvements to cluster validation, but rather than really go through these in detail, I'm going to jump over to the demo briefly and show you some of these enhancements. Before I show you the Hyper-V test, though, quick overview of some of the improvements we've made. We made it faster. especially around storage validation. We're no longer testing every single disk with every single node. We optimize an algorithm to ensure that everything will work, but we don't have to go test everything against everything. You have the ability to test a specific LAN. So you could say, I only want to test this new disk that I added to the cluster. All of my existing disks that are in production, I already know they work. We now understand replicated storage in the cluster. Previous versions with cluster validation, if you had mirrored storage across both sites, we would just put a warning and say, we don't understand the storage. Sorry, make sure you test it. We now understand how to look at this mirrored storage, this replicated storage across both sites, and we're going to check that it's consistent. It maps to each other. You have consistent sizes, consistent names. So if an application moves from one site to another, moves from storage at the first site to the storage at the second site, everything will continue to work. And then we added some network reliability tests as well. Now, all of the cluster communication happens on port 3343. And we found that there were some customers that had very locked down firewalls. And they would just turn everything off by default and only turn on a few specific ports they needed, without really understanding what the cluster needed to communicate. So now, as part of our cluster validation test, we're just going to specifically check that we have access to those ports so that the cluster can communicate better. But let's switch over and actually take a look at some of our Hyper-V enhancements here. So what we're looking at here is our new Windows Server 2012 R2 cluster. I'm running the consumer preview bits, so the bits that were made available this week. And I will say, this is a very, very stable, very solid build for a preview. I'm really happy with the engineering teams, both Hyper-V and clustering. Very, very solid build. But let's actually take a look at some of our Hyper-V tests here and see what we've really done to make sure that if you're building a Hyper-V cluster, it's going to be operating exactly how you want. Now, in this particular test, I have purposely put a few bugs in here so we can see some, you know, warnings, some different errors. Now, we go down to our Hyper-V configuration here. There we go. And you can see that we have about 10 different tests now. First thing we're going to do here is list the Hyper-V information. So this is essentially saying, if you already have any virtual machines that are on a server but not clustered, we're going to go inventory them so that you go and remember to cluster them later. Next test that we look at is list information about the servers running Hyper-V. So we're basically making sure that you have the Hyper-V role installed on every node in the cluster ahead of time. But then we're also going to take a look at the networks on both of those nodes as well. They'll let you know if you have VMQ enabled, SRIOV enabled. Next, we take a look at compatibility of virtual fiber channel SANs. Now, this is one where I have a warning. I went and actually configured a virtualized fiber channel on this node, but I actually don't have the capability to do this. So it's telling me, hey, you made a configuration that you shouldn't be doing. You've set something up for a Hyper-V virtual machine to use, but you don't have this capability to use it. Stop, go take a look at this. You're probably not following a best practice. Now, I'm not going to go through the rest in detail here, but very quickly, Hyper-V integration services. If you're building a guest cluster, so you're running validation on a virtual machine, we're going to check that those integration components are installed within that virtual machine. We do compatibility for our memory resource pools, our network resource pools, our processor resource pool, and our storage resource pool. So this is essentially checking things such as you have consistent naming conventions. You don't want to have a cluster network on node one called network one, have a network on the second node called network two, because when that virtual machine moves between those different nodes, it's going to be trying to access a different network based on its configuration file. So we're checking naming consistency across all the clusters as well. We check that you have the role installed, and then we check that you have matching processor manufacturers. So this is ensuring that live migration will work, so we can do live migration Intel to Intel, or AMD to AMD. Basically, make sure that you're going to get set up for success. Now, cluster upgrades, we think that people are going to be pretty excited to move to 2012 R2. So we wanted to make it even easier to move your virtual machines. Now, to migrate between a cluster, There's no, there's basically no rolling update. And so what I mean, when you actually go and move from a 2008 R2 or 2012 R2 cluster, so 2012 cluster, to a new 2012 R2 cluster, we're actually going to the old cluster, copying the roles, and moving them to the new cluster. So what this means is you need your old cluster online and your new cluster online at the same time. So a lot of people say, you know, hey, I only have a 2-node cluster. How can I do this? Basically, what you're going to do, you're going to evict one of the nodes in the cluster, upgrade it to 2012 R2, so you have 2 1-node clusters, do the copy, destroy the old cluster, upgrade it to 2012 R2, add it to the new cluster. So using 2 nodes, you can go through this process. Now, one of the enhancements that we wanted to make specifically for Hyper-V is the ability to live migrate across these 2 different versions. So you will be able to live migrate from 2012 to 2012 R2 and back. So this means no downtime for your virtual machines. However, there are a few things you need to be aware of if you're doing this. If you're moving a VM from 2012 to 2012 R2, at some point you want to upgrade the integration components within that virtual machine. To minimize the downtime, we recommend doing that just the next time you have to restart that virtual machine anyway. So next time you go and patch that VM, that would be a great time to actually update those integration components so you don't have to have an extra reboot. Now, you also want to think about, hey, if I'm going to move from this old version to the new version, if you're using a scale-out file server on the back end, so remember, this was at that file server level, multiple shares with the same client access point, whack, whack, my share, whack, whack, my share. You also want to think about upgrading that to 2012 R2 as well. And with that process, you know, that can be a little more involved. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because later today, I have a session with Ben Armstrong from the Hyper-V team, who's going to talk about Hyper-V upgrades, Jose Barreto from the file server team, who's going to talk about the file server upgrades, and myself talking about the upgrades to show you in detail how you would go through this process. And that session's at 5 o'clock today. It's called Upgrading Your Private Cloud to Windows Server 2012 R2. But moving along, what do you want to go and deploy on your cluster? Well, in this release, 2012 R2, we haven't really changed much. So there's a few roles that now we've added support for in 2012. We added support for the iSCSI target. 2012 R2, no major changes here for what's supported. Our most common roles continue to be Hyper-V, SQL, Exchange, and file server. And we found these count for about 95, 96% of all the clusters in the world. And so what you'll find with these 4 particular roles, a lot of tight integration with cluster management and that workload management. Now, let's go over and start talking about our new management features. Now, this is an important message. Traditionally, we've said that you could go build all of your clusters the same way. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, a file server, a Hyper-V. We're changing this now. We are going to be treating Hyper-V clusters differently. But what this means for you is you do not need to make any changes. We make these changes for you automatically. We want to treat these different clusters as different workloads. So really want to try to emphasize Hyper-V clusters are different. So you've already seen we have the different cluster validation tests. This includes validation before you deploy the cluster, as well as testing best practices by running validation while the cluster's online. We've already talked about the support for the shared VHDX for your guest cluster. Two other updates, two other changes that we make internally that you don't have to think about. First of all, we change our heartbeat settings for Hyper-V clusters. Now, heartbeats are the health checks that we're sending between the nodes. Now, what we found is, with our Hyper-V clusters, now that a lot of customers are, you know, using these team networks, they're using multi-site clustering using the Hyper-V replica, traditional cluster heartbeat settings were actually sometimes causing more trouble than they were solving. We would have more false failovers than we really wanted. And so what we now do with our heartbeat settings, as soon as you install the Hyper-V role, add your first VM to your Hyper-V cluster, we automatically change the heartbeat settings for your cluster. We basically heartbeat much less frequently. Now, what we realized with the heartbeats was having a false failover for a Hyper-V cluster for a node is often really bad because you're not just losing that one node, you're losing 10 VMs running on it as well. So we want it to be more resilient. We do this heart beating less frequently, less likely to cause a false failover, better resiliency for you. The second major change we have is for the cluster database. So I'm going to give you just a quick overview of how the cluster keeps a consistent view of every node. Internally, every single cluster node has its own database that keeps track of what's running in the cluster. It's under hklm/cluster. In this database, we keep track of every single clustered workload, so anything running on the cluster. We keep track of all of the properties for that workload, so the private properties, the name, the IP address. And we keep track of their state. Is the resource online? Is it offline? Has it failed? Now, it's important for a cluster to always have a consistent view from every node in the cluster. And the reason for this is, if we have a network partition, we want to make sure that all of the nodes know what every other node has done. So let's say I have 4 VMs running on one node. There's a partition, or this node crashes. Well, some other node in the cluster needs to go and start those 4 virtual machines, right? But that node needs to know what the old node was running. It needs to know what were the 4 virtual machines, what are the properties of those virtual machines, what's the state of those virtual machines. So we always need to have a consistent membership view of what the cluster is doing. Now, what we do with clustering, anytime a change is made to any resource on any node, it goes and updates every other node immediately. So you bring a new virtual machine online. That node tells every other node that the change has been made. You go and change a private property. That node tells every other node a change has been made. Now, this is done actually using what we call GUM, which is our global update manager. Now, what we found with Hyper-V clusters, we found challenges with actually pushing this out and getting a response from these large clusters. So what we would do traditionally is we would go and say, hey, I want to go make a change, send it out, but we wouldn't necessarily get an acknowledgement back because those networks had live migration traffic. They were split across different sites due to Hyper-V replica, and sometimes this would delay the time it would take to start up a workload because the node would say, hey, I'm making a change. It's waiting for the other nodes to say, great, we've seen the change, and that can just cause churn, cause delay in getting these workloads running. What we've done in 2012R2, rather than waiting for every single node to respond and say, I see this update, we now only wait for a majority of the nodes to respond and say, we see an update. So what this means is you're going to get the resources online faster, better response time, better replication of this internal cluster information. Now, that was a lot about the internals, both how we change the heartbeat settings, how we change the database. From your perspective, you don't need to make any changes. As soon as we see a VM deployed on a Hyper-V cluster, we will go and make these changes for you. We wanted to make some improvements to the cluster dashboard, make it easier to manage. So I'm actually going to go back to the demo and show you these instead. Now, first thing we wanted to do, we're seeing customers have a lot more clusters in their data center. So we wanted to make additional cluster management easier. So we're going to go and, connect to a different cluster. I'll show you the new interface. So this is a Windows Server 2012 cluster that I'm connecting to. And we're going to try to actually show you some improved cluster management. What you're going to see once this connects here is that we get immediate status across all of my clusters from a single location. So I can see how many roles are running on each of my clusters. What's the status of my nodes on each of my clusters? So I can actually see on my other cluster, I have one of my nodes down. Easy for me to figure out, easy for me to investigate, and it gives me information about the warning. So some simplified cluster management here. The next enhancement we made, this came from a popular request from you guys, showing what node was owning a particular disk, straight from the disk management view. So you could see what node owns the quorum disk, what node owns a CSV volume, the coordinator of that CSV disk, to try to simplify that management there. Next enhancement we made is showing quorum status. And this is how many votes we have. Now, very shortly, we're going to spend some time looking at the quorum enhancements, but I just want to quickly show you here. in this interface, you can see which nodes are online, which nodes are voting. So you know what? One other enhancement I'm going to show you. A lot of people haven't found this yet. With your cluster network management, much simpler to configure live migration. We actually have this in 2012 RTM as well. Click on the networks, configure live migration. You have the ability to say which networks can be used for that live migration traffic, and also prioritize them, give them a rank, and say, by default, I want this network. If it's not available, this network, this network. By the way, I'm following a really bad cluster best practice here. Only one network, single point of failure. So don't do what I'm doing with this one. Let's switch back to our presentation. Quorum changes. Okay, we made a lot of changes around quorum as we're starting to see these larger clusters. And we've basically rewritten our quorum model in this release in 2012 R2. We've really tried to simplify it. We tried to get rid of the complexity. So we no longer have these traditional quorum modes. Node majority, node and dismajority, node and file share witness. I will clarify, if you still want to use these, you can. We provide an advanced quorum setting option to go and tweak these, but we don't want you to think about these as your options anymore. The reason why, as part of our engineering decision here, we're seeing customers scale up their clusters as large as possible, these 64-node clusters. Now, when you had a small cluster, a 4-node cluster, and you might lose two disks, you may not have enough capacity to go and run everything on the remaining two nodes. If you have a 64-node cluster, you lose a few disks, you're probably still going to be able to keep things running. Now, if it's a Hyper-V cluster, you lose 32 nodes of a 64-node Hyper-V cluster. Maybe you don't have the capacity to run all of the VMs, but remember, with 2012, we have features such as virtual machine prioritization. This means that we're going to ensure that your high-priority VMs stay running. If there's capacity, medium will stay running. If there's still capacity, low priority will stay running. But essentially, since we have live migration priority, we're going to ensure that the most critical VMs are going to be online, they're going to be functional. And so even if you lose 32 nodes in your cluster, should we actually shut down the entire cluster? No, you've lost 32 nodes of processing power. We want you to keep that 32-node cluster running. If you lose 3/4 of your nodes, do we want to go shut down that cluster? No, we still want to keep those remaining nodes online, keep them healthy, and those high-priority VMs will always be running. Now, another enhancement as part of the prioritization a lot of people are unfamiliar with is we have a capability that we call preemption. Now, what that means is if I have a host that has a low-priority VM on it, I'm moving a high-priority VM to that host. There's nowhere else for that high-priority virtual machine to go. We will actually gracefully shut down the low-priority VM and say, high-priority preempts it. It's more important. And so what this means, as we look at this model, you start to lose cluster nodes. All your high-priority VMs will stay online. The lower-priority ones will gradually shut down. Okay, that's kind of the background as far as how we made this decision that we needed to change our quorum model. We said, no matter what, we want to keep your cluster running. You know what? Even if you lose every node, you get down to your last surviving node, hey, that's still something, right? Because you're going to keep your most critical infrastructure VMs running, your domain controllers, your DHCP DNS servers. So we're now no longer going to turn off your cluster if you lose quorum. What we have is the ability to assign votes, or do not assign votes, to different nodes. So in the past, every node has had one vote, right? You now have the ability to say, you know what, this node will never have a vote. So why would you want to turn off a vote for a node? Well, we see this in multi-site clusters, where you have two different sites. We may have three nodes at our primary site, three votes, two nodes at our secondary site, two votes. And the challenge that we saw in the past was, if you lost your primary site, you lost quorum. Secondary site would shut down. You'd have to force quorum to restart it. So what you can do now is you can just adjust the number of votes at each site. So you can say, you know what, I want my primary site to only have one vote. I'm going to turn off two of the votes on my primary. So if I lose my primary, secondary still has majority, still stays up. So different deployment models based on how many sites you have. But we had a lot of customers say, hey, I want the ability to change my votes. You can now do that. The second big change here is we now have what we call a dynamic witness disk. Now, this is the disk in a cluster, the quorum disk, the witness disk, that has a vote. So we see a two-node cluster. You're going to want to use a disk as a third vote, right? So you lose either node, you have that disk online, you have majority. You keep your cluster up and running. What we realize, though, with these large clusters where nodes are coming up, nodes are going online, offline, online, we want it to be a little more flexible. What we're going to do is we will automatically change whether that disk has a vote or does not have a vote. So if you have a, let's say, a two-node cluster, sorry, you have a three-node cluster, we always want an odd number of votes. The reason why we always want an odd number of votes is if we have a network partition, one side can always have majority, no matter where it is. So with quorum, we always want an odd number of votes. What we do with this dynamic disk is, let's say I have a three-node cluster, I'm going to give my disk no vote, so I have three total votes. If one of these nodes goes offline or crashes, we're then going to turn on a vote. This disk now has a vote, so we still have three. If this node comes back online, we'll turn back off this vote. So again, always going to ensure that we have an odd number of votes across the cluster. Let's actually check this out in action. So I'm going to go back to my node view here. And this is where we see these different votes. We can see that all of my nodes have a vote assigned to them, and all of them are currently voting. They're all participating in the cluster. So I have three nodes, three votes here. Now, I also have a cluster disk here, my quorum disk. So right now, this doesn't have a vote. I got my three nodes, zero votes for the disk. What we're going to do is we're going to go and turn off one of the nodes. We're going to see how this changes. Node 2. So I just want to make sure that I don't shut down a node that's running a VM here. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to just say more action, stop the cluster service. So this is just basically saying, hey, don't run the cluster service on this node. As you can see, this node is now down. We've changed the vote to zero. So only the two nodes are voting, but now my disk gets a vote as well. So you'll see as we turn these nodes on, turn them off, we're going to automatically change the quorum settings for you so it's optimized. Don't have to think about these challenges. If I turn my node back on, I restart the cluster service. We'll see the vote will get changed back to one. This node's going to rejoin the cluster, rejoin cluster membership, bring that vote back online. So this may take a minute. We'll go back to this very shortly. Now, we wanted to make some other improvements in how we manage the quorum across multiple data centers. So we made two different ways to go and actually manage forcing quorum. To take a step back, if you're unfamiliar with forcing quorum, this is going to be useful if you have, let's say, a five-node cluster across two different data centers. Your primary site crashes, unavailable. There's no network in the area. Maybe there's a disaster in the area. You cannot even physically go to the data center. So sometimes this node, it doesn't have majority. Sorry, this site does not have majority. This site shuts down. So forcing quorum means even though a site does not have majority, we're going to bring it online. We're going to have it start. Now, the challenge that we saw, sometimes we would basically have this partition. The two sites couldn't talk to each other. One site was running. But since we couldn't see the other site, that site was also running. And what this meant was we would have two inconsistent views of the cluster database. So you would have this isolated site that you can't drive to, doing things, making churn. It has one view of what the cluster looks like, the changes, who's running what, the properties. Remember this cluster database? It has one view of that. Since it hasn't been able to speak to this other site, which is the site that we want to use, the site we can access, the site that we forced quorum in, we know what's happening. But this has a completely different view of the cluster. We have different VMs on different nodes, different state changes. What we now have the ability to do is, if you go to a particular site and you say, force quorum, this is the site that I want to use, we will say that this site has the authoritative version of this database. So what this means, you go to this site, this is going to be the winning site. Once your other site comes back online, and the two sites can start talking to each other, there's not going to be a conflict over whose version of the database is correct. The site that you force quorum in, that becomes the primary site. That's the authoritative site, and it will copy its database to this site. This site will resynchronize, and you'll then have your full functioning cluster. So essentially, we're giving you resiliency when you rejoin sites after a disaster. We also added the ability for a tiebreaker. Now, what this means is, this is essentially automatically prioritizing which site is authoritative. So similar concept, you have a multi-site, there's a partition, which site wins? Well, by default, you can assign a site as the winner and say, hey, anytime I have a split, my nodes rejoin, this site will always be the primary site. This will have the authoritative copy of the database, push the information to the secondary site. Now, the way we implement this, a little unusual. Basically, what we do, there's a private property that you can set on a particular node saying, I am the lowest node. That site will always lose. Little odd implementation, but that's how we go and configure it. So we have, let's say my second site has the lowest node. When these two sites join, the site with the lowest node will lose, and it will receive a copy of the cluster database. Now, one challenge we saw with these servers is having multiple administrators simultaneously accessing a host, but not really knowing what is running on that host, if there's virtual machines running on it. You have that administrator goes and reboots the host after installing some patches. There's VMs on it. Guess what? You've shut down a bunch of VMs. Now, in 2012 RTM, we actually have a timer that waits, I think, about 2 minutes, but it's configurable to try to live migrate those VMs off. But if you have a host with 50 virtual machines, you're probably not going to be able to live migrate all of them in 2 minutes. So after waiting for 2 minutes, that host will shut down, and then it'll be a quick migration. The VMs will come back online on the other site, but you will have downtime. What we've done, we've directly built into the shell the ability to go and check for virtual machines that are running and wait for them to be live migrated off of the host before the node gets shut down. So if you have an administrator that just doesn't know there's VMs there, they click shutdown, not a problem. We'll wait, we'll live migrate everything off, and then we will shut down so that we can make sure that we have resiliency to these virtual machines. Hyper-V replica. I briefly covered some of these enhancements already. We now have configurable replication frequency. So if 5 minutes is too slow for you, you can now replicate every 30 seconds. If 5 minutes is too fast for you because internet's expensive where you live, you don't have reliable connections, you can make it 15 minutes. So you now have 3 levels of replication setting depending on your user case. We also added the ability to have multiple layers of replication. Now, we had a lot of customers that do replication from a primary data center to a secondary data center that are pretty close by. We call this metro clustering. So maybe it's on two sides of a city or two cities that are close to each other. But they're still worried about having a regional disaster. If the entire city loses power, what do they do? So then they're replicated to a third location that's maybe, 100 kilometers away, somewhere further away. We now have the ability to automatically configure this, so you could do your 30-second replication within the city and then automatically do a 5-minute or a 15-minute replication to a secondary location. Now, Hyper-V replica on a cluster is actually slightly different, and I want to show you the difference rather than explain it. Now, Hyper-V replica, the difference with a cluster is we make the replication engine highly available as well. So what this means is we want to make sure that your VMs are always replicating, right? If it's on a cluster, maybe an important VM. But we want to make sure this replication agent is also highly available. And so we cluster it. We call this the Hyper-V replica broker. And so what this means is if a cluster node crashes, we can fail over this broker to a different location, a different node restarted, so you always get replication. It's high availability for the replication engine. Now, we actually go configure this just like a traditional cluster role. And you're going to see an option here for the Hyper-V replica broker. We're going to go check that Hyper-V is enabled on every node so that we can use this feature, so it's quickly contacting the different nodes in the cluster. It's confirmed I have Hyper-V installed. Ask me for the name of the broker. So I'll call this Simon's Hyper-V Replica Broker Europe. Click continue. And this will go and create this replication engine that's always clustered, always online. Now, an important consideration here, you can only deploy one Hyper-V replica broker on a cluster. This one broker can manage replication for 1,000 VMs. It doesn't matter how many VMs. But there's only one of these engines on a cluster because it's going to fail over between the different nodes. Now, for this reason, you cannot do replication between nodes within a single cluster. Okay? You can replicate from one cluster to a second cluster between the two replica engines. You can replicate from a cluster to a standalone host, from a standalone host to a cluster to standalone host. But again, want to emphasize, you cannot do replication within a single cluster because we only have one of these replication engines. So this actually changes your multi-site clustering model. What this means is if you have two different locations, you're actually going to put clusters on two different locations. You're now going to have two different clusters. You replicate from one cluster to the second cluster. This changes our traditional multi-site clustering model where you would have a single cluster which crossed both sites. Again, we now have two clusters, one at each location. They each have a replication engine copy to each other. Once you've got this replication engine configured, we see it's online. Configuring replication is just the same as you would if you're actually doing a Hyper-V replica on a standalone host. This will go launch Hyper-V replica broker configuration. You say, I want to enable this. We go and say which type of security we want to use, specify which replication hosts we want. I'm going to allow replication from any server. Here's what I'm missing. It told me you're missing a path. We're using a cluster. We're using virtual machines on a cluster. We need to use cluster shared volumes. So I can go browse. Oh, let me just enter C. Cluster storage, volume 1. This way we make sure that we replicate to our CSV disks so that our VMs are always highly available and we have live migration. It prompts me and reminds me about turning on a certain firewall port. Sounds good. And we've enabled replication. So essentially, once you get this broker up and running, configuring replication is the same as on a standalone host. And you have the ability to go and actually move this replication engine to different locations. Now, this is a setting here that a lot of people ask, you know, what exactly does this mean? Move to the best possible node. If you use 2012, you're trying to move a virtual machine, you see this option, move to best possible node. What is that? What we're actually doing, the cluster is always keeping track of the amount of memory resources used by every node in the cluster. Is it an 80% memory capacity, 20% memory capacity? And so when we move to the best possible node in a cluster, we will automatically move that workload to the node with the most free memory. That simple. Now, the reason why we worked through this, how we got to this point, is we started to talk to the System Center Virtual Machine Manager team. If you're familiar with that product, they give you the ability to specify hosts based on four different options of when I move a VM or deploy a VM, what's most important. Is it the network? Is it disk I/O? Is it CPU? Or is it memory? And we found a huge majority of our customers always pick the memory option. Memory is the resource that's the biggest constraint. And so our customers love that. They're like, hey, I can always put it to the host with the most free memory. But if you didn't have Virtual Machine Manager, you would actually kind of have to go look at each of the hosts and figure out, hey, do I want to move it to host 1 or host 64? That's a lot of nodes to look at. So we wanted to simplify this. We will now automatically move your VMs to the best possible node, meaning the node with the most amount of free memory. Uh-oh. We'll restart this here. There we go. So we moved it to the node with the most free memory. We also have the ability, of course, to go move it to a specific node if we want to select that. Now, one other thing you're going to notice here is we do some other interesting live migration checks as well. What you're going to see when we run a live migration, What you're going to see here when we run a live migration is when we say we want to move this virtual machine to a different node, rather than immediately moving that virtual machine, we're going to go and perform some checks ahead of time. We're basically going to proactively make sure that that server is running, make sure the required services are running for that virtual machine, and also make sure that the network on that other server is available. The challenge of what we did in the past, we would say live migrate, we would go move that virtual machine, let's click it, to a different node, does processing, then starts the live migration. Now, if you went and moved a virtual machine to a node that had a bad server service, or you moved a virtual machine to a node that didn't have a virtual network available, that virtual machine is not going to be functional. Clients won't be able to connect to this. So what we've done here, we basically do a bunch of pre-checks to make sure that before you move that virtual machine, before you live migrate it, that host is going to be functional. That host will ensure that the virtual machines are going to run. So just some additional built-in resiliency here. Now, additionally, one of the other enhancements we made is rebalancing our clustered shared volume coordinator nodes. Now, some insight. Basically, every clustered shared volume disk has a bit of management logic that we call the coordinator. And basically, this coordinator just keeps track of which nodes, which VMs are accessing a particular disk. If you had to do redirected access for clustered shared volumes, which basically meant routing traffic from one node to another back to the disk, we would actually pass the traffic through that coordinator node. Now, what we saw over time is we would have customers that might have 10 different coordinators. They have 10 different CSV disks. As they would patch a node, a CSV coordinator would fail over, patch a different node, both of them would fail over, and gradually you would see all of these coordinators essentially get pushed down to just a small subset of nodes. So maybe you have a 64-node cluster, but all of the coordinators are running on just one or two nodes. If you had disk access, this meant we were passing all this traffic through those one or two nodes. And so those nodes could get overwhelmed, a lot of churn. What we've done now is just built in some basic load balancing for our CSV volumes. What we're going to do, look at all the different nodes, look at all the CSV coordinators, and just try to spread them out, try to optimize their placement so we're not flooding a particular disk, a particular node, with too much traffic. We've also added storage quality of service, or QoS. Now, what this means is you have the ability to assign a maximum amount of bandwidth or a minimum amount of bandwidth to a particular virtual machine. Now, one challenge you know we heard from these customers running lots of VMs is they might have a particular client that was too talkative. It was using too much disk I/O. And so that would impact every other virtual machine that was running on that host. So by throttling it, we can ensure that each virtual machine only has access, only uses so much amount of storage I/O. This way, they're not taking anything away from any other VMs running on the host. But an interesting thing we added as well is the minimum bandwidth, ensuring that we have a minimum amount of disk I/O happening. Kind of odd, right? Why would we want to ensure there's a minimum? Well, the reason we do this is this now gives you the ability to detect if you have an unused virtual machine in your environment. We have this problem with virtual machine sprawl. People deploy VMs, forget about them, never use them. They're still using up memory. But they don't really need to be. They're not really needed. So what you can do with the minimum storage quality of service is set an alert and say, hey, if a VM isn't using at least this much I/O over a certain period of time, go send an alert. I want to go investigate what that VM is doing, whether I even need it still running in my environment. Additionally, there's been some improvements added around login and around deployment. So if you need to go and look at the cluster log because there's a misconfiguration deployment problem, we have more verbose login, more detailed information about what that challenge might be. Now, clustering with System Center 2012 R2. Now, first of all, what can Virtual Machine Manager do? There's three big enhancements that Virtual Machine Manager made specifically for clustering. First of all, you can now deploy a scale-out file server. So you remember we have our host cluster, guest cluster, the scale-out file server cluster. We can now deploy that scale-out file server cluster end-to-end using Virtual Machine Manager, configuring all those different routes, all those paths. So essentially, Virtual Machine Manager gives you the ability to deploy all these different layers of clustering. The built-in update management capability. Cluster Update Manager. It will now patch these scale-out file servers as well. So it can manage anything which Virtual Machine Manager manage does automated patching. We've seen a lot of customers move towards network virtualization. Now, if you're using a lot of network virtualization and have multiple isolated tenants, and you're often going to be using a networking feature called NVGRE, Network Virtualization, Generic Resource Encapsulation. Long story short, it basically translates internal addresses on this private network to the external public addresses and back. Now, if you have this private network, you have all these VMs, they can be clustered, you could do failovers, and that can change the IP address of the virtual machines within this private network. When we do that, we will update the gateway so that the gateway always knows and points us to the correct virtual machine. So basically, we have this integration with this multi-tenant story, this multi-tenant scenario. Now, what about the other System Center products? System Center App Controller. This is our self-service portal. This allows you to deploy VMs to hosts or to clusters. Configuration Manager allows you to make sure that your clusters and your VMs are secure and compliant. Data Protection Manager allows you to back up and restore your VMs on CSV disks, even during live migration. System Center Endpoint Protection allows you to make sure that all of your clustered roles, clustered nodes, VMs, are protected from malware, from different viruses. Operations Manager gives you the ability to monitor your VMs and your clusters. Orchestrator is our automation engine. You could go automate things, deploy VMs across your clusters, deploy clusters. But again, need to add, you have to do it via Virtual Machine Manager. Service Manager, our self-service portal, lets you report and view cluster configuration problems. And System Center Advisor gives you the ability to analyze your clusters and your VMs for best practices. So what is System Center Advisor? System Center Advisor is a free utility which is essentially a best practice analyzer from the cloud. So first of all, it is not part of the System Center 2012 suite. It is independent, and it is free. You could go online today, systemcenteradvisor.com, sign up. And what it will do is it will go allow you to download agents, run tests, and essentially it's going to go through the registry of your different servers you want to test and look for best practices. See if you're missing patches. See if you have misconfiguration because you have two roles that probably shouldn't live together. Essentially, it's going to ensure that your entire data center is following best practices. And so how do we come up with these best practices? Well, we actually work with the engineering teams work with product support, the phone help guys. We found that so many cluster misconfigurations and other misconfigurations were repetitive problems. Customers didn't realize we see the same problem again and again and again. Over millions and millions of hours of customer data, we were able to figure out the most common misconfigurations, and we built these checks into Advisor. So what Advisor does, you go install the agent, it collects information that it's looking for, it will then go send it up to the System Center Advisor service, which is running up in Windows Azure. It then does all of the processing and figures out what best practices you're following, what you should do. And so again, I want to emphasize, all of this processing happens in the cloud. You're not using your own data center to do this processing and using resources there. After it processes it up in Azure, it will go send you a report and say, hey, these are the different challenges you have. These are the best practices you're not following. But more importantly, it will tell you how to fix it. It doesn't just say, you have a problem. It will say, you have a problem, and you need to install KB article blah to go and fix it. So it gives you prescriptive guidance to keep this infrastructure up and running. So this is very relevant to clustering because and high availability because it gives you better resiliency because you're following new best practices, less chance of downtime, less chance of misconfiguration. And System Center Advisor will look at Hyper-V, clustering, SQL, Link, Exchange, all of these key critical enterprise workloads. Make sure you're following the best practices. Now, if you have Operations Manager, you can actually go and plug the reports inside Operations Manager and use that Operations Manager console to see the differences. So the difference, again, between Advisor, this is proactive monitoring. Make sure you follow best practices. Operations Manager is real-time monitoring. When something happens, we then send a report. But these two solutions put together give you a great end-to-end solution to ensure that you avoid misconfiguration and you fix it once it happens. Finally, I just want to point you to a few resources. If you want to learn more about these different high availability solutions, check out the Microsoft Virtual Academy, www.microsoftvirtualacademy.com. We have training courses on all the System Center products, on virtualization, Hyper-V, failover clustering, and it's entirely free. So great free resource, and please encourage your friends to go check this out as well. We have IT camps, which are in-person training activities run by evangelists like myself worldwide. If you want to get some hands-on experience using these products with a full day of labs, go to aka.msitcamps, or this longer URL, you can sign up for an in-person day of free training. And of course, the TechNet Evaluation Center. Download the products, try them out. System Center 2012 R2 and Windows Server 2012 R2 are now available for download in their preview mode. Finally, as we wrap it up, I hope that you learned a lot of different best practices here. You've got to really think about these different stages as you build your cluster and optimize for high availability. Thinking about the hardware going all the way up the stack. Thinking about your traditional clusters, your virtualized clusters, and your clustered storage. Thinking about high availability for your management system. And then, of course, thinking about site resiliency, high availability across sites. Hopefully, I encourage you to check out Windows Server 2012 R2. Great solution, excellent customer preview, so please go download it today. Thank you. Around for questions for as long as people have questions. Please just give me 2 minutes to get off the stage so that our next presenter can get ready. Thank you.